Well, good morning.
Morning.
How's your week been leading up to Christmas? Busy? I can tell that the activity has begun to percolate again because when Luke left work yesterday, it took him another 45 minutes to get out of the parking lot at the Tanger outlet. Just to leave the mall, it took him 45 minutes. It took him an hour and a half. Jay may know something about this. At Thanksgiving, it took him an hour and a half to leave because of all the craziness and the Black Friday and whatever, all that stuff. Have you ever had, let's see how to say this, one of those situations where somebody that you know, we'll use code words. How about this? Some young buck decides that they're going to come and tell you, the old dog, how things are. You ever had anybody do that to you? Where they decide they're gonna tell you exactly the way things really are because you just don't understand. I've had that happen on a couple of occasions, and I just smiled, and I listened. Because what I've learned, being the old dog now, is that it doesn't usually matter if I say anything to that young buck about all their wisdom, because they know it all right now. Well, interjected in this narrative about Job, we have a couple of chapters, quite a few chapters. There's been sort of this quiet person in the story that we didn't even know was there. He may have been, some minion of one of the other three friends of Job. But all of a sudden, it's kind of like he hears that Popeye thing in the back of his head. I've stands all I can stand, and I can't stands no more. And he just decides he has to jump into this dialogue between Eliphaz and Zophar and what's the other one? I'm always forgetting the third one. Eliphaz, Zophar, and yeah. So we get a name that hasn't been before mentioned, and this is the name that I always kind of kept trying to interject. It's Elihu. Elihu is kind of this young guy. He may have been attached to Eliphaz. I don't know, since their names both have Eli at the beginning, which is, you know, God. But evidently he's about to pop. He's been listening to both sides of this discussion, and he feels like he can no longer be quiet. So he sort of takes a bit of time to address Job, and then he turns and he addresses the three. And he kind of deals with both. Today we're going to kind of look at what he says to Job first. Okay. So what you're going to see up there is the NASB. That's what I'll read. I've got in my Bible, I got NIV. You may have something else that you're looking at, but let's kind of use what we have to kind of work through this. So here we have Elihu, and he begins launching out on what he wants to say. It says, then these three men ceased answering Job, because he was righteous in his own eyes. But the anger of Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, whichever way you want to do it, doesn't really matter, of the family of Ram, burned. Against Job, his anger burned because he justified himself before God. So Elihu is just, he's been listening to all this for however long it's been going on, and the one thing that has just got up under his craw is the fact that he believes that Job is defending his integrity and saying he did not do anything to bring this on. And Elihu just can't stand it anymore. And his anger burned against his three friends because they had found no answer and yet had condemned Job. So, not only is he upset with Job, but he's also upset with these other three more wise gentlemen. Okay, or the older. And you got to understand, in this culture, age is respected and is considered to be more wise, which is why he's saying, I said nothing, but now I've sat on the sidelines and listened to all these old codgers that we respect and love, and I'm just not happy with anybody. I'm not happy with you three guys, because while you sit there and accuse Job, you can't get to the root of the issue. And he's frustrated with Job because Job has said, I didn't do anything. So he's upset with both of them. Now, Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were years older than he. And when Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of the three men, his anger burned. So this is what he says. So Elihu, the son of Barakel, the Buzite, spoke out and said, "I am young in years, and you are old. Therefore I was shy and afraid to tell you what I think. I thought age should speak, and increased years should teach wisdom. But it is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty gives them understanding. The abundant in years may not be wise, nor may elders understand justice. So I say, listen to me, and I too will tell you what I think." So he's saying, evidently what I thought about you guys doesn't seem to be very true. And he's not making, you know, I'm sure there were, but you got to, at the same time, you got to think. You know, this is probably not going real well from either side of this equation. So he says, So I say, listen to me, I too will tell you what I think. Behold, I waited for your words and listened to your reasonings while you pondered what to say. I even paid close attention to you. You know, it's kind of funny. Okay, so you got this young guy saying, you know, I'm upset with you. So I actually paid attention to what you said. A little condescending. Kind of like I was there, I'm listening to you, but I didn't pay attention to what you said. You see, that just doesn't, it's like, I hope that he did pay attention to what they said, because he's going to interject himself and act like he knows what he's talking about. So I hope that he listened to what they said, or else he's just spouting off. Indeed, there was no one of you who refuted Job, not one of you who answered his words. Do not say, "We have found wisdom. God will rout him, not man. For he has not arranged his words against me, nor will I reply to him with your arguments. They are dismayed. They will no longer answer. Words have failed them. Shall I wait because they do not speak, because they stop and no longer answer? I too will answer my share, and I also will tell my opinion. For I am full of words. The spirit within me constrains me. Behold, my belly is like unvented wine, like new wineskins. It's about to burst. Let me speak that I may get relief. Let me open my lips and answer. Let me now be partial to no one, nor flatter any man. For I do not know how to flatter, else my Maker would soon take me away." So that was the end of 32. Hello, Elijah. Good to see you. So as I read through the New American Standard, is there anything that you think might be important or more clear that we look at that may be in the version that you're reading? Something that you think brings it out, something that we need to discuss. I think he means that no one was effectively able to say, "This is what you did, Job." And so he's acknowledging that all they did was say, "You've done something, you've done something, you've done something," but they were not able to be specific with him in any kind of way. And I think he sees the weakness of that. Right. No one could say that he did not do exactly as he said. That was why he was in trouble, why all this stuff was going on. It was because he had done something, or a series of somethings. And yet Job is saying, "No, I'm holding to my integrity. You know, it's not that I'm perfect, but I've done nothing that you would consider to be tantamount to, you know, God having a reason to essentially punish me this way." And so he's upset with God because he feels like God's doing this to him. Okay, so we'll keep going. So in chapter 33, so we got this young guy who's standing up and he's upset with everybody, and he's going to pretty much tell everybody what he thinks. So at this point, all he's done is kind of set the table to say what he wants to say. And so in chapter 33, he sort of begins to launch out, and he focuses here in the things that he sees Job having trouble with. So he says, "However now, Job, please hear my speech and listen to all my words. Behold, now I open my mouth and my tongue in my mouth speaks. My words are from the uprightness of my heart and my lips speak knowledge sincerely." At this point, who's more humble, Job or Elihu? What I'm going to say is Elihu, I believe, is convinced that he is full enough that he's going to pop. And he used that illustration of the wineskin to describe the fact that he feels like he's so full, he can, again, it's like Popeye. I've stands all I can stands, I can't stands no more. Okay, he is going to do something. He's going to say something. He's got to. Okay? Now, he may think that's inspiration. What we know is he's stirred up, and it's clear. So here when he starts to talk to Job, the only thing that the issue, that the problem is that there seems to be some, if you were to put it on scales, okay, and you're going to say, humility Job, humility Elihu, okay, at this point, Job is a lot more weighty when it comes to the humility factor, okay? Here you go, you got Elihu, this young guy who just can't stand it anymore. He's upset with this group because they're not able to pin Job down. He's upset with Job because Job won't cave. And so he believes that he's just got to share what he's got to share. And so he says, and he believes, that he's saying all that he's going to say, and he's saying, I haven't done anything wrong either. So when he says, my words are from the uprightness of my heart and my lips speak knowledge sincerely, he's saying he doesn't have a dog in the fight, and he's trying to be fair, and he's trying to say what he thinks God would say. And he's about to pop. So the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. Refute me if you can. Array yourselves before me. Take your stand. In other words, if I'm wrong, tell me so. Show me how. Behold, I belong to God like you. I too have been formed out of the clay. Behold, no fear of me should terrify you, nor should my pressure weigh heavily upon you. In other words, don't be afraid of me. Surely you have spoken in my hearing, and I have heard the sound of your words. I am pure without transgression. I am innocent, and there is no guilt in me. Behold, he invents pretexts against me. He counts me as his enemy. He puts my feet in the stock. He watches all my paths. Now, this is Elihu doing the counselor thing. He is reflecting back to Job the things that he hears Job saying. So he gets it. He's saying, he's listening to Job, and he hears Job saying, I've got integrity. And I'm frustrated because I don't understand why all this stuff has happened to me. Because if we listened to the three amigos, this stuff shouldn't be happening to me. That makes sense? And Elihu's been listening to that. Elihu says further, behold, let me tell you, you are not right in this, for God is greater than man. So he has stopped paraphrasing for Job, and he has started to say what the problem he sees with Job is. And the problem that he sees with Job is that God's bigger than us. God is God. He's holy, he's righteous, he's good, he's in charge. And he's saying, Job, in relationship to God, you are not blameless. We'll see that in the next verse. John, go on to the next. He says, why do you complain against him that he does not give account of all his doings? Indeed, God speaks once or twice, yet no one notices it. In a dream, in visions of night, when sound sleep falls on men while they slumber in their beds, he opens the ears of men and seals their instruction that he may turn aside from his conduct and keep man from pride. God is not silent. That's what he's saying. Go back to the other previous there, John, at the end. Okay. He's saying that he in some way thinks that Job is saying that he, Job, is somehow more righteous than God. That is what Elihu perceives. Is that what Job has said? Okay. So why has Elihu interpreted what Job has said in that way? What school has Elihu been to? The Three Amigos School of Theology. He is under the tutelage of these other guys. At least one of these other guys. Maybe all three. So what he hears and what he sees is that Job is saying, when Job is saying he has integrity and he's done nothing for this to happen, he perceives Job as saying that Job knows better than God. And Job is justified before God, and he interprets that as Job saying he knows better than God. Does this make sense? That doesn't mean that he's right in his interpretation. It just means that's what he understands. Okay, so we go back to 13. So then he asks Job, why do you complain against God that he does not give account of all his doings? In other words, Job, you're crying out to God and you're wanting God to tell you why all this stuff has happened whenever you've done nothing to deserve it. And then he says, essentially, yes, God does speak. Now, can we agree with Elihu? Has he got that right? Okay. Dreams, visions, inspiration. Okay, all these things that he's talking about in verse 14 down to verse 17, all these things, yeah, God does these things. He even says in 18, he keeps back his soul from the pit and his life from passing over into Sheol. In other words, God sustains people. He's the one that does it. Okay? John, verse 19. He says, man is also chastened with pain on his bed and with unceasing complaint in his bones, so that his life loathes bread and his soul favorite food. His flesh wastes away from sight, and his bones which were not seen stick out. Then his soul draws near to the pit and his life to those who bring death. If there is an angel as a mediator for him, one out of 1,000 to remind him... Okay, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to do 23, because we're going to talk about that for a minute. All these things, he's saying, okay, God speaks in all these ways, okay? So he gives visions, he gives dreams, okay? He moves people. He's saying, even with circumstances, he does discipline people, okay? And some of the circumstances that he mentions are those that are there in 19, okay? So, in other words, being sick, okay? Sometimes our sin leads us to illness. Or sometimes God afflicts us. And if you look at Hebrews, what does Hebrews say about God chastising his sons and his daughters? It says he's a good father. Sometimes he allows us to be disciplined. So, there's some truth in that. God does do that. Okay? We see this is consistent with what God does in people's lives. Is there anything you want to process up through 22? Anything you got a question about, something you see that we need to look at? So as we move into 23, it is a very interesting hypothetical. It is a hypothetical for Elihu. In other words, he's saying, what if? He's talked about how God communicates, okay? And then he gets into this what if, which is another way he sees God could communicate. But I want you to listen very carefully to how he describes this, okay? He says, if there is an angel as mediator for him, one out of 1,000, to remind a man what is right for him, then let him be gracious to him and say, deliver him from going down to the pit. I have found a ransom. Let his flesh become fresher than in youth. Let him return to the days of his youthful vigor. Then he will pray to God and he will accept him and that he may see his face with joy, and he may restore his righteousness to man. He will sing to men and say, I have sinned and perverted what is right, and it is not proper for me. He has redeemed my soul from going to the pit, and my life shall see light. Now, let's not go to that one yet. Let's stay there. So, Elihu launches out here and talks about this hypothetical. Here's another way God could speak. You notice some things about this hypothetical. There you go. You got to remember how long before there was ever a thought of a Jesus. That this, in fact, if we're saying this is one of the oldest stories in the Bible, perhaps taking place, perhaps being an oral tradition before Moses ever got to the mountain, it does make things kind of interesting. So, what is he saying that this mediator, this mediating angel would do? Why would he insert this right here, do you think? What does he want Job? Remember, he's talking to Job. He's speaking to Job. What would this angel do? Because again, this is hypothetical. What would this angel do for this other hypothetical person who is doing the things that Job is doing? You got to understand, this is all like, well, what if? Okay? So he's saying, what if there was an angel mediator who came to somebody like you, Job, without saying you, Job, and this angel did these things. What are the things that he's saying this angel would do? And what would happen based on what this angel would do? Okay, this angel somehow would secure a ransom for the life of this person who was like Job. Okay? And then he would be restored. Okay? And it says he would pray and God would accept him. Okay, those are all great things. That he would be joyful again. He may restore his righteousness to man. In other words, that person who's like Job would be restored. His righteousness, his reputation would be once again restated. He will sing to men and say, I have... Now, here's what you got to see. What is Elihu saying should be the result? He would sing to men and say, I have sinned and perverted what is right and is not proper for me. He's saying that's what the man should say. Okay? So the angel does this stuff, and in response, the man says this. Yes. Okay? So, what is it that Elihu is looking for? It is. I agree. Yeah, that's a very good observation. Thank you. So, this is one of those times where Elihu is speaking better than he understands to some degree, but he doesn't have it right. You know, it's right. It's misdirected. Okay? But it is interesting. It is very interesting that there would be an understanding of a need in man for a mediator, even at this point, because that is something that a lot of people in the world will tell you did not exist until much later. All right, so we have the hypothetical. We understand he expects Job. He's saying, look, if you really want this to go right, believe you got an angel in your pocket, confess, and everything will start becoming better. All right, now he can go on. So in 29 he says, behold, God does all these oftentimes with men to bring back his soul from the pit that he may be enlightened with the light of life. Pay attention, O Job, listen to me. Keep silent and let me speak. Then if you have anything to say, answer me. Speak, for I desire to justify you. So he's saying that he really wants Job to be right. But his understanding is that in order for Job to be right, Job has to say what he's done. No? Well, but he's directed the hypothetical only at Job. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it's really right at him. You know, it's I understand what you're saying. He still sounds very steeped in the other side, because he still has the conviction that Job has done something really bad. Now, if we can divorce our concept of circumstances from always being God's judgment, then we can understand these things that he's saying in a different context. But whenever you say that all these circumstances, the trouble, are always caused by sin, there is a problem with the theology. Does that make sense? That's right. Who did this, that? Exactly. Which we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about a little bit at 11 o'clock today. Yes. The reality is things are more complex than the system that we can create to answer everything in a nice, neat, tidy little package. And the problem was, so far, Eliphaz and, Bildad, thank you. They bought into the package system, and it looks as though Elihu, while he makes some really good observations, that he still struggles with that connection of all these negative circumstances having to come from sin. Again, Elihu is trying to cut to the chase what he's expressed that he's frustrated with. And he's addressing the first part of that, and that is Job. And he wants Job to confess because Elihu's understanding is that these things happen to a person because they sinned. And he's mad with Job because Job will not say, I sinned, that's why this has happened. Yes. I mean, the right, right, right. And he's saying, hypothetically, all you got to do is confess and you'll be right. See, that is where he kind of falls back in the ditch of the system. Is he saying, look, if you'll just, you know, if you got an angel on your shoulder, and if you'll just confess, then everything will go back to being hunky-dory. So he's still in that systematic ditch because he connects all this stuff that's happened with the fact that there must be a sin behind it. Okay? All right. We're good. We're at a place where we can kind of pause. So Elihu has addressed Job, and what we'll look at next Sunday is when Elihu turns his attention towards his mentors and starts to deal with them about what he wants to criticize them about. Okay? All right? Let's pray. Father, thank you for showing us many things in Job that, Lord, were prophetic in nature about what you would do in your son. And Lord, it also shows us to be careful about being legalistic and about attaching things to the truth that aren't your truth. Lord, I pray that we would seek your righteousness and that, Lord, we would understand that we can only get that through the one who has come to be our mediator, and that would be through Jesus. And Lord, as we sift through all of this and we understand the purpose and the power of trouble in this world, Lord, I pray that we'll remember that all this that happens, Lord, is not outside of your vision nor your ability to redeem us and to use it to reconcile us to you and others to you. Lord, help us to see that as we continue. We ask this in Jesus' name.